difficulty of 10. And Mills is an absolute magician. He set up.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition, and possibly the last week of all time's edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. Joining you as always, Steve Haller, with me as always, and for the foreseeable hour, Andy Pregler and Christian de Guzman. What's going on, guys?
We may or may not be getting Thanos snapped right now.
Mr. Haller, I don't feel so good.
Oh, God. So for any of you guys who've been with us for some time, or for anyone just tuning in, we are in the process of kind of working through a rebrand on the podcast. Vox did not extend the podcast. They are still, the site will still be live. The site will still be active. We probably will still be able to post this as a fan shot on the site, or we'll try and find some way to get it to anybody who reads. Officially... moving forward, the Troy Nunes is an Absolute Magician podcast, or Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast, will now be known as the Disloyal Idiots, thanks to one James Arthur Boeheim.
The best part about this new shift is that literally when anybody says the Disloyal Idiots say something, they will not be inaccurate. They might be misquoting us. They might not necessarily be saying, we might not have actually said what they said we said. However, Disloyal Idiots are going to be a thing. Yeah, you can follow that logic. Disloyal Idiots is going to be a thing moving forward. We're really excited. If you are listening on a podcast feed, podcast app, watching us on Twitch, nothing's going to change for you. The feed will stay the same. The rebranding will hit whenever the contract officially ends with Vox. You won't have to resubscribe to anything else. All this really changes is for those of you who go to newsmagician.com to read our stuff, that will no longer be as easy as it used to be. There's Steve, Christian, and I are working on getting some Twitter accounts set up. I have a Substack that I'll be posting this to for those that, for some reason, really like to have it open in a tab in the background instead of using a podcast app. Listen, we all have our quirks. Do what you will. We're really excited about this. It's going to be a great opportunity. We're partnering up as part of a network with a bunch of other former Vox podcasts, so there should be lots of cool things coming your way in the future. And again, we really appreciate your support for allowing us to feel confident in making the decision that we can continue to do this show, for our enjoyment, but also that there's people like Homefield and our wonderful guests that sometime pop on that see value in this and want to talk to us and talk to the rest of our listener base. So we really appreciate your support that's gotten us to this point.
And for anyone who's wondering, we will be part of what is at present the fledgling Fans First Sports Network. It's going to be a collective of a lot of the former Vox podcasts, as well as, grabbing some new talent here and there. So you'll start seeing stuff pop up on them pretty soon, and we'll move forward from there.
So with the housekeeping out of the way, who wants to get yelled at by James Arthur first and talk about the mess that was the week of Syracuse basketball?
Can we do what we did last week and spend 5 minutes on this and move on very quickly?
Well, we can spend about as many seconds as we lost by points, so that's we're still under a minute in how long we can or we have to talk about them.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to say we had to talk for as many minutes as points Syracuse gave up, to which I would say I am still recovering from a friend's 30th birthday. I am losing my voice, and I do not think I can talk that long, considering that Syracuse gave up back-to-back 90-point performances for the first time since the Jerry McNamara, not 10 fucking games, season, I think I saw. And then I also saw that this is the first time that Syracuse has lost while giving up back-to-back 90-point games since pre-Jim Boeheim. Or it's something like we've given up 90 points 4 times this year, and the last time that happened and was
that's actually how Syracuse calendars are, like, on campus. That's how calendars are referenced, yeah. Right? PJB and AJB.
Yeah. No, it's BB for before Boeheim, and then AB for after Boeheim.
Yeah, the Boeheim era is definitively ending Well, in a way that I don't think any of us saw coming. Like, we knew it wasn't going to be pretty. I didn't necessarily think it was going to be dumpster fire.
I didn't think it was going to be Bobby Knight, which is what we're starting to run into, which is what hurts.
So let's talk, like, I don't think it, this is actually going to be really silly, to Christian's point. I don't think there's a lot to talk about with the Pitt game. Boeheim pissed off Pitt. Pitt was ready for that game. The Pitt was the vintage Pitt. Pitt has a pretty solid team. They came out motivated. Like, Syracuse was going to need to play an A-plus game to even compete in that. And then you saw Benny Williams and who else got the start? Justin Taylor got the please don't transfer start. And that was the beginning of the end.
To credit, to take a positive from the game, Benny actually had his best game in an orange uniform.
Yeah.
Because for some reason, he decided his jump shot was going to be consistent. Which, for the first time in an orange uniform, is what happened.
And that's something that would have come in handy through most of the season, not just here in transfer showcase time.
If you take that game from Benny Williams, Syracuse wins those games 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
It's just unfortunate that 1 time out of 10 is during the stretch where Syracuse defense forgot how to defense.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. I watched as much of that game as I could, I turned it on late and continued to watch through the debacle that was giving up 99 points to Pitt.
Yeah, I had to.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't forced to, but I missed the first half. By the time I turned it down, Cuse was only down. Oh no, I turned it on about halftime. They were down what, 10-ish, and then
it was 20. I think it was single digits at half.
Yeah,
and then
it stretched pretty. It stretched right out of the half, kind of thing.
Yeah, like we can actually break it down that way because Pitt, like, to be fair, didn't shoot it that well in the first half. And that's what kept it Syracuse close, and Syracuse's offense was doing pretty well. But then Pitt just exploited the zone in the second half.
Right.
And,
which seems to be a recurring theme.
Yeah. I think it was 62 points Pitt scored in the second half.
You are accurate. Pitt scored 62 points in the second half. For reference, that is the total number, that is more points that, or equal to the same number of points that Syracuse scored in games against Duke, UVA, and let's see, where else can this look bad? Oh, the Notre Dame win. Oh, that's really upsetting. So, yeah.
That's depressing.
Yeah.
The defense, I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum, but, like, the defense is bad. And I don't necessarily know if going to man would help. It's just that
physically cannot hurt.
Yes, it can.
Well, yeah, but what are we going to lose by 30 instead of 20?
Yes.
Okay. It still looks bad either way.
Yeah.
James posted on the website, the highlight from Boeheim's press conference. We don't have another defense.
This is the guy who said going into the season that he was prepping man to be played almost as much as zone, right?
And then the first three games of the season happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which were against non-Power 5 teams.
Well, and then the games after that happened that they didn't look much better against non-Power 5 teams.
Yeah. Let's gloss over those facts.
Huh. It's almost like this team is bad.
No, we'll give that away. It's a frustrating thing because much like a team that we'll get to and opposite of a team that all three of us are used to covering, the offense at times doesn't look half bad. Like, there's good offensive potential in this team. It's just that the defense, like, really, really lets it down.
I mean, they scored 82 points against Pitt and they scored 73 against Clemson. If the 2-3 zone...
Yeah, you'll take those.
Yeah, if the 2-3 zone does what it's supposed to do... Those are one possession games at worst. And instead, they're blowout losses because, yeah, I keep looking. I'm looking at the ESPN schedule thing. I like the way they just have it, like, in a little nice little skinny thing.
Yeah.
And that Illinois loss where we lost 73-44, I know that there was a lot to write off from that game because it was coming off of the Bryant shit show. But really, that should have been the canary in the coal mine. And instead, we took a 5-game winning streak against Notre Dame, Oakland, Georgetown, Monmouth, and Cornell to believe that there was something here. And there never was. Like, that, it's, it right. really did kind of, we didn't look at the process, and that was always the undoing here.
Well, and that's been the recurring theme this athletic season. I mean, same thing with football. You saw a 6-game win streak and a good showing against Clemson, and everyone thinks that's, you know, the be-all, end-all of, like, oh, they're 6-0. And it's like, no, they're, look at what's actually happening. It's the same thing with the basketball team. There are pieces. There is, as weird as it sounds to say, and we've said it through the season, there's talent on this team. It just isn't the right talent within itself, like, within the team. Like, it doesn't work well together. Like, we have good scorers. We have a decent offense. We have this. We have that. We have some guys that can play man, some guys that can play zone, and when you don't have 5 guys that can do either, you end up looking like we do. And it's like this weird amalgamation of Frankenstein's... It's Boeheim's monster. That's what we've created. Mary Shelley, be damned. We've created Boeheim's monster.
I don't like it. Yeah, it's not ideal. I think the Clemson game... you know, all 5 starters for Clemson scored in double figures. Like, that's not what you want.
Oh, really? What did I just say?
They were both, you know, both teams shot 38% from 3, and Clemson out-rebounded Syracuse 38-28. You know, the field goal percentage for Syracuse was 47%. Clemson shot 52%. Like, the numbers itself on the offensive side are not all that bad. Judah had another Judah type of game. It's just that defensively and on the boards, this team's not it. And I know that the rebounding thing feels like a beaten horse after 20 years, but like this year, the guys aren't able to compete in the paint. Like, they're just not physical enough. Jesse is afraid to do things. Like, he's the only rebounder, yeah. And at times it looks really obvious that he's afraid that he's going to foul. He does.
Yeah, I will say I do think it is part physical. I think it is more so positioning, because some of the positioning is just horrific. Because there are guys who get wide open looks at rebounds on opposing teams with only Jesse in there with a hope of contesting the rebound. So,
well,
I think it's more a positioning thing, which is probably the bigger concern.
Yeah, we know none of our forwards are going to rebound. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
That seems problematic. Just, you know, in general, I feel like your forwards should be doing a little bit more. But
I mean, what kind of craziness is that?
I think we should have raised a red flag when Chris Bell said he didn't have the rebound in high school.
Well, and on a normal team, is Chris Bell playing the 3?
No.
Right.
No.
Like, in all honesty, put him in his length at the top of the zone, and what do you have?
That's what this is. This team is a whole bunch of 2s.
It kind of is. Like,
there's four 2s on this team. No, yeah, 4 2s on this team. Gerard, Mintz, Taylor, and Bell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that you say this, my brain is just melting because yeah, that explains everything.
Yeah,
and we're not talking like vintage Villanova, like Archer Donacchio era, like that many guards sitting around and one big. It's like there, it's a little different look than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as per tradition on this podcast, basketball gets the short end of the stick because basketball is not very good. Let's talk about lacrosse. Yeah, I was going to say, we were really just driving home that Syracuse sports is a great place to be. Christian, what happened this weekend and why am I sad?
Syracuse lost to UNC in the ACC opener. Not great. The main... I was thinking about this while watching the game and while also simultaneously watching the Pitt game since they were back-to-back. I'm going to use some men's basketball analogies for this.
Oh, boy.
Because it'll be great to help understand some of the problems that this Syracuse team has in terms of while there's good things that are, you know, good with this Syracuse men's lacrosse team, there are also some bad things.
So for, again, any new listeners, this is Annie and Steve Learn Lacrosse Corner.
Mm-hmm.
So Christian is our teacher, and here we are.
And this is Christian, who learned through osmosis from guys who played lacrosse in high school before coming to Syracuse as journalism majors. So thanks to Nick and Adam, those guys out there, they know. We'll start with the goods. One of the best things about this team right now, and it's something they didn't have last year, was this team was scoring on extra man opportunities. And I actually didn't know what a good Mendoza line for extra mans were until Paul Carcaterra said it on the broadcast. This is why I love having Carc and either like Quinn or Anish on the broadcast. It was. Yep. Paul Carcaterra this week on the Syracuse broadcast, so that helps, you know, to help break down the game of lacrosse even more. Your Mendoza line for extra man opportunities is 40%.
Okay.
And coming into the game, Syracuse was at 78%.
That seems good.
Yeah. Yeah.
You heard, that seems good. I heard, ooh, the regression bus is rolling down.
I figured I'd set it up for the fall.
Well, the regression actually didn't happen in this game. Let me rephrase that. The regression happened because it only dropped by 10% to 66% after this game. Because Syracuse won 5 of 10, which is still above the Mendoza line for the game. Okay. So, like, that's a good thing. But let's break that down even further, because Syracuse scored 5 extra man goals. That means they only scored 8 6-on-6 goals, which adds up to 13. Syracuse lost 19-13 to UNC. And that's a little bit worrying, because as good as Syracuse's offense is, you would expect them to score a little bit more than 8 even-strength goals. And this is where my men's basketball analogies will start. Syracuse looks like Syracuse operates in a team very much like they're playing against a zone defense in basketball. And when we've seen teams play against Syracuse in basketball, the ball never stops moving. You rarely see a team dribble against Syracuse's zone, especially this season. The ball is always moving. The ball is always passing. That's what this Syracuse offense and men's lacrosse wants to do. They want to keep the ball moving. They want to play hot potato with the ball, right, which is why their extra man opportunities are so good. It's because they have so many talented passers and the ball just keeps moving and you don't have to dodge and take guys on one-on-one in extra man opportunities. However, when you're playing on 6-on-6, North Carolina and Paul Carcaterra also pointed this out. North Carolina decided that they weren't going to send double teams. They weren't going to send slides. They were going to try and challenge Syracuse to defeat guys one-on-one with their dodging skills. And that's where Syracuse's offense right now kind of struggles. Syracuse doesn't have a Judah Mintz who will drive to the cage and try and blow by a guy or Brian Juka guy. A lot of the offense, and we've seen this, is developed through passes. That's the high-risk, high-reward structure of Syracuse. Right. It's what, in large part, led to the 9 first-half turnovers that caused Syracuse to fall behind in the first half, which is what ultimately decided the game, was the first half wasn't a clean first half for Syracuse. And you see that because this Syracuse team, in lacrosse sense, has a lot of Klay Thompsons and Malik Browns and Marek Dolezais. It's probably more accurate to say they have a lot of Klay Thompsons and Marek Dolezais, but they don't have a Judah Mintz.
Right. You don't have the Curry to Thompson or the.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay.
Exactly. So you have a lot of guys who will be shooters from distance, or a Marek Dolezais passer and shooter.
Okay.
Syracuse could have a guy like that in Judah Mintz. It's just that they're asking him to be Samir Torrance right now. And that's Joey Spallina.
Right.
Because Spallina has the dodging ability. He looks like he has the dodging ability. But right now, in the way that the offense operates, he's the guy who needs to be the quarterback. He needs to be the guy who's the passer.
Right.
And he's openly said that he is looking to be a pass-first player, which is what I said with Mike Ostrowski. He was covering the game. He has the opposite problem of Mintz, where I think he needs to, especially now that he's kind of settled into the college lacrosse game,
mm-hmm.
I think Spallina needs to shoot more. Yeah. And, like, if you take away the first game, like, that he had, where he was, you know, it was his first game against a collegiate opponent, I think it's time now that where Spallina can start to take some battles one-on-one himself and not, you know, try and pass that off and and run the offense from behind the cage.
Do you turn someone like Hiltz into that quarterback?
No, because no one else on this team plays Hiltz's role.
Hmm. I'm the just lefty shooter on the ability. Wing.
Yeah. Well, also the lefty right. shooter on the side. No one else on Syracuse can do that.
Gotcha.
And so the thing that makes that weird for Syracuse is that you kind of need Spallina back there, but you don't need him to pass it all the time. I think there's more opportunities for Spallina to take on his defender instead of pass it off, basically.
Can he talk to his coach? Because he kind of did that.
Well, yeah. But I think I think both Gate and Spallina want him to be a pass-first guy right now.
Right.
I think it's time for him to. I think it's time for him to take some more opportunities one on one with guys.
Well, I guess it kind of is one of those where do you have him take those one on one opportunities and force? Because at this point, it hasn't really been confirmed that at the collegiate level he can do that and like would force a slide or something like that.
He proved that with that behind the back goal.
Well, true, but like, yeah, that okay, fair. We'll give you that one. But it's like, is it something that'll force a defender, you know, a double coming to him and throw things off where he can pass out of it?
In theory, it should. North Carolina, like Clark said. Like Paul Carter said,
yeah.
seemed to have a game plan of to not draw, not to bring doubles. So,
yeah, and go figure, two out of the three announcers you mentioned are Syracuse alums.
Mm-hmm.
And Quint, even though he's a Hopkins alum, will still, you know, he's yeah. still really, really good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Clark couldn't help run the midfield in the 90s for no reason. But I know I rag along on the offense. It's because it's the flashiest right now.
Right.
It's the thing that's going to win Syracuse games.
Mm-hmm.
The defense decidedly did not, which is where a lot of this should go to, because it was a sad regression to the last year,
really?
Where the off-ball defense was just not great. So what Syracuse did was the opposite of what North Carolina did. Syracuse brought slides. They brought double teams.
Yep.
However, the secondary slides to recover from the guy who was sliding were not on time.
So it was Syracuse basketball?
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That again, the zonal rotation just isn't there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Except, and again, it's zone with man-to-man principles. But Syracuse is, I mean.
All right, Raftery.
Yeah, yeah. Onions. Okay. Because Syracuse doesn't play zone. I mean, most of the cross defenses don't play zone. They're playing man.
Right.
But obviously, once one guy decides to slide, the other guys have to follow suit. And there were way too many guys who were left one-on-one with just three shots to take at Will Mark. And it might look bad and said, oh, Will Mark gave up 19 goals. He had 17 saves.
Yeah, that's pretty damn good.
Like, that's still pretty good.
And that's also extremely shitty that they gave up that many shots.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot. Like, that's a hockey number of shots.
Yep, North Carolina had 36 shots on goal. Syracuse only had 25.
About that.
Yeah. That in large part was due to the turnovers in the first half that were caused that the Syracuse offense had with all the passing. North Carolina's ride was also very good. And also Johnny Ricciuzza didn't have a great first half at the faceoff X. He settled in the second half and actually gave Syracuse a chance in the second half with the faceoff.
It's funny because I was actually following that on the stat line.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't able to watch the game because I had kid stuff, but I was following the box score on my phone. And one of the things, thank you for, making me think about these things, but I was like constantly refreshing the stat line to see like how faceoffs were going and all that. It wasn't egregious.
Yeah, I mean, the first half, again, it was bad. Like, Syracuse lost this game in the first half. Mm-hmm. Face-offs in the first half, it was 13-7 in favor of North Carolina.
Okay.
But in the second half, it was 9-6 Syracuse. So, it was better in the second half.
Right. And that, 19-13, like, at one point, Syracuse closed it to within two, right? 15-13 or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like 15-12 or 15-13. Like,
yeah.
They made a run to make a game of it, and then...
Mm-hmm. A large part of that was on the face-off, winning face-offs, and also capitalizing on those extra man opportunities.
Right. Look at that. We actually did a decent amount of time on lacrosse.
Listen, this is basketball team is bad.
But that, I guess the other thing, too, is like, call me crazy if I'm crazy, but this seems like it's a very young Cuse team. Like, outside of the couple of transfers, this seems like it's a very young core to this team.
Yeah, especially on offense. On offense, it's very young because the core, the building blocks of the offense is Joey Spallina, Finn Thompson, Michael Leo on the second line, Luke Roa.
Yeah.
Hiltz isn't young anymore. It's his third year at Syracuse.
No, but I mean, as in, like, there's more time with this group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also, like, the new faces are also grad transfers, so, new to the program, and Alex Simmons and Cole Kirst.
Yep. And Mark.
Yeah, Mark as well. Defense-wise as well, I mean, the disappointing thing is the one veteran on defense, Nick Kakima, was arguably the worst defender, which is very, very concerning. The short stick middies, I mean, the defensive middies are a strength of this team as well. Sam Alexo, Carter Rice, Max Rosa, those guys have done pretty well. Same with Landon Clary. So there is potential in this team, definitely.
Potential is fun. I'm just like, to put a bow on this topic of conversation, like, obviously the schedule is a gauntlet. Like, is there going to be time for them to get to achieve this potential, or are they going to have to kind of figure this out quicker rather than, getting some time to play around and figure it out?
You have to kind of survive until after the Hopkins game, which is the next two games. Because, luckily the next two games are at home. It's, Duke and Hopkins, both at home at the Dome. So, you've got some, hope there, but,
If they can swing one out of those two, it puts them in a good spot.
Yeah, if you can swing one of those two, preferably the Duke one, because you want to at least put yourself in good standing against an ACC foe.
Right.
Especially an ACC foe you played twice this year.
Mm-hmm. Get at least one of the home and away.
Yeah. But that Duke game is going to be tough, especially because, UNC's offense is okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, they completely shredded Syracuse. And then Duke has Brennan O'Neill, who was last year's Joey Spallina.
Right.
So,
Well, and then you've got Hopkins, you've got the Mikey retirement, yeah. Which it's probably going to be a good crowd for that game, if nothing else.
So, I mean, it's not like Syracuse fans have anything else to cheer after Syracuse gets bopped in the first game of the ACC tournament.
Point. So if you take that, if you magically can take that Duke game, then you've got a decent, mm-hmm. you're going into a decent home field advantage against the Hopkins crowd, and there you go.
Then, and you know there will be a good amount of Hopkins people there as well, mainly just to see not only Syracuse take on Hopkins, but to see Petromala take on Hopkins.
Right. I forgot about that storyline, too. Yeah. And then, they at least get some recovery with Hofstra, Bonnies, Hobart, Notre Dame, Princeton.
And then you have Hofstra, Bonnies, and Hobart, and then, right, like we said last week, you have the murderer's row at the end of the schedule.
I was going to say, that five-game stretch is just not happy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But here we are, and in all honesty, like, for all we can say, they look better than last year.
If the defense looks a little bit better in the next two games, there's hope. Especially because you have better goalie play. You have a lot better man up play as well. If you can cut down on a little bit of the turnovers on offense, and also shore up a bit of the secondary slides on defense, you have building blocks here for Syracuse.
Hey, all you can really ask for at this point is, building blocks with the young team and be competitive in big games. So we'll see where that leads next week. But for now, we are leading into our home field ad break.
I was waiting for whatever snappy segue you had to get into halftime.
Home Field Apparel, maker of the finest vintage collegiate apparel. If you're watching on the Twitch stream, I am wearing one of the Syracuse 2003 National Championship shirts. Steve is wearing an NDSU retro 70s disco logo that's just fantastic. This is the comfiest clothing brand that you will find on the interweb that has collegiate vintage logos on everything. Highly recommend it. This week they are dropping a limited edition USC and UCLA collection, so if you are a fan of the Pac-12 action,
more to come on that later.
Well, I was gonna say, or as we're gonna jump into next, maybe some future conference opponents, that collection is gonna be fantastic. You should head over to Home Field Apparel and check out what they have. If you've never bought from Home Field before, use promo code Nunes, N-U-N-E-S, for 10% off your first order at Home Field Apparel.
And if you want the joggers that I'm currently wearing with the nice Syracuse Block S logo on them, too bad you can't get them, but they're really, really comfortable.
You can still get joggers. They just don't have logos on them. And I will tell you what, I know that they don't have Syracuse on them, but those joggers might be the most comfortable pair of pants that I own.
So I thought they were lying. They come with a tag that literally says, if you want it to be more comfortable, wash them. And I had worn them, and I was like, these are very comfortable. And then I washed them, and I was like, holy shit, they're right.
They do not false advertise.
Yeah.
They are. If there's one thing that Connor is, he is very transparent and honest.
See the podcast that he was on a couple months ago.
I was gonna say, see the why didn't Syracuse get a national championship soccer T-shirt? Home Field's response: we were really hoping for the other team.
No, really. What makes you say?
Oh God. That's great.
Yeah, listen, love these guys. They are fantastic. Thank you, Home Field, as always, for sponsoring our show. Gentlemen, before my voice goes any further, I want to talk to you about some football stuff. Not that there's really a ton of Syracuse-specific news to come out, but there is some overall college football stuff that is adjacent to Syracuse. Thank you. The biggest one being football scheduling, our favorite topic. We are seeing that with a lot of the shifting that's taking place with the SEC and Big Ten realignment, that games are getting canceled. Syracuse has yet to fall victim to one of these for our future schedule, but if you remember, we had a Wisconsin home-and-home that got canceled due to a lot of shifting around. Syracuse does have the Purdue series on the books, but there's a lot of empty slots for the non-conference kind of moving forward in a way that is slightly worrying. So it came out, I got to check the exact date when it came out, but we've heard about this before. There was a report today that from Forbes that the Pac-12 and ACC are looking at some kind of partnership where essentially the two conferences would find a way to bundle media rights together for football games, whether that means being in the same conference, unclear, whether it just means having scheduled home and homes and then selling those TV rights off as an individual package to try to boost the overall monetary value of these games. That seems kind of interesting. But as a Syracuse fan, I don't love the idea of adding more difficult games to the schedule. However, as somebody who follows Syracuse's schedule, it's really apparent that we don't have a great plan for the schedule moving forward. And this is a reminder. I need to pull up the future schedules, but the next couple of years, we've got some doozies of a non-conference schedule, future football schedules. Yeah, while I vamp here.
I want to say next year isn't bad, but after that it gets really weird.
Yeah. Let's see. So this year is obviously Colgate, Western Michigan, Purdue, Army, with only Purdue on the road. Not great, but honestly, like, Colgate, Western Michigan, Army. Army's a little bit tricky, but the rest of that's probably fine. 2024, Ohio, at Army, home against Holy Cross, and an unannounced location and date for UConn.
That's a very winnable four non-conference games, which, I mean, either you have a rebounding Dino or a new head coach with that slate.
And then we get to 2025.
Right.
Tennessee in Atlanta, Georgia. UConn, Army at Notre Dame.
Not great, Bob.
2026. New Hampshire.
Hold on. Army. Hold on. 2025 still. The way it lines up, it's looking at Clemson, at Florida State, too, that year, and at Virginia.
At Wake as well.
Oh, yeah. Not great.
I'm sorry.
Hope that Notre Dame game is at, like, MetLife or something.
Yeah, it is TBA, so you never know. 2026, New Hampshire, Army, UConn, Notre Dame again, because we... and then 2027 starts the home-and-home series with Penn State. And for the record, that is the only 2027-2028. Penn State is the only Power 5 opponent scheduled. We have UConn scheduled for 2027. 28 and beyond.
Notre Dame. I think we have Notre Dame for 28 as well.
No, 29.
Yeah.
29 Notre Dame, Morgan State.
Morgan State is going to be a weird one.
Then what schedule am I looking at?
We have 2029, 2034,
yep.
And 2037 against Notre Dame.
I have 28, 29, 34, and 37 right now.
Huh. I do love that we have them out till 2037, thanks to the deal there.
I mean, pretending like the college football landscape's even going to look the same in 2037 is a hilarious assumption.
It is. What the hell are you talking about?
I'm assuming by then we'll be the new equivalent of whatever FBS is, because it's just going to be like 20 teams at the top forming the Premier League. We'll be in League One, or like the bottom end of the championship, if we want to equate it to English soccer, because that's what we do.
Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued.
When's Ryan Reynolds going to take over Syracuse?
Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney make a TV show about taking over Syracuse football.
I mean, listen, if you bring in the Pac-12, you're bringing in Hollywood. I think that this is all. I think this is all coming up Ryan Reynolds to.
Yeah, the notable Los Angeles pool that is now going to the Big Ten.
See, the problem is because Reynolds is a Vancouver guy. If he was a Toronto guy, I would 100% say that. You know, we got to find a Toronto.
But what you're saying is that Syracuse and the Pac-12 need to figure out how to keep Oregon and Washington in the Pac-12.
There you go.
I thought it was interesting. It's weird. Syracuse needs to figure something out because, man, these I'm glad we're scheduled through 2026. But man, the Penn State home and home, the UConn, the 2025 schedule is going to be just an absolute gauntlet. Right. No, thank you. I'm not happy. I'm going to just put my head in a hole for that season.
Yeah. Yeah, by then you hope that North Carolina's run of quarterbacks comes to an end in 2025.
Would hope. That would be nice.
That'd be, yeah.
Because then, like, you know, the 2025, like, home schedule looks manageable with Boston College, North Carolina, Pitt, and Virginia Tech. That's a manageable home schedule also. Because you hope that Pitt doesn't, you know, improve. You hope that Virginia Tech doesn't improve. Boston College is Boston College.
Oh boy. I mean, this is the challenge.
You just get to get crushed by Tennessee in the first game of the season.
I mean, maybe Tennessee has Tennessee by then, and they've gotten rid of the successful coach, and they're back to being mediocre.
Or more likely, the successful coach gets bought out by Auburn or something.
We're not the only ones.
Turns out that having the color orange in college football is pretty hard.
Unless mm-hmm. you're Clemson.
Mm. No, they're purple.
Mm.
Yeah.
In that case, we're blue.
Yeah.
Dr. Daryl Gross would like to have a word with you.
Yeah, I mean, during the Casillo times, it was...
The other type of football that took place this week, MLS is starting back up. In fact, if you want to watch MLS right now on Fox Sports 1, Seattle is playing Colorado. It is 0-0 for maybe one person on this podcast who is slightly interested in the Seattle score.
Do you think I don't already have that up somewhere? There's multiple screens going on here, my friend.
My team won today, so I'm happy.
There are a bunch of Syracuse players playing in the MLS. Steve did a giant preview about it for the site. Talk us through some names that we should be looking for in the headlines, aside from Miles Robinson, who I saw made his full first team return for the first time since popping his Achilles.
That seems to be the case. Yeah, I mean, Miles, technically, I did not have him first name on my team sheet because of coming back off the injury. I went with Kamal Miller because Miller made a hell of a name for himself at the World Cup. He's been playing solid the last couple of years for Orlando City and then Montreal. He's kind of the locked-in starter at center back for Montreal. He's been playing phenomenal. I didn't see what he did. Did Montreal play yesterday? Didn't have time to check the wraparound before I got here, but if anyone isn't watching the Apple TV coverage of MLS, they are absolutely killing it. Their recap shows, their pregame shows, their in-game coverage has been phenomenal. If you're a T-Mobile subscriber, you get it for free, so look and find a code for that. I don't know how to do
whoever
it.
Whoever is a T-Mobile subscriber and would like to give me Apple TV, I'd be very, very much appreciative.
I talk to me after.
I will be talking to you after this.
I may have some people that I know will never use theirs. So that's how I got it for free. I had paid for it and then had Apple refund me because somebody gave me a code. I was like, I like free more than paid.
Yeah.
So, their coverage has been awesome. There's still going to be the marquee games, two a week on Fox, on like Big Fox or Fox Sports. But they will also be available on Apple TV. One other note, or one big note, Alex Bono, a former TFC player for many, many years, transferred to DC United over the offseason on a free. So the veteran is now a goalkeeper, and Syracuse native is now a goalkeeper for DC, who hosted Toronto in the season opener. I don't believe he started. I think Miller started over him.
Miller did, but they the final score for that game was 3-2. So, you know, so there might be some opportunity. Yeah.
Ryan Raposo is signed with the Whitecaps. None of the draft picks that the Whitecaps took are currently signed, which would be Levante Johnson or Buster Schoberg. Neither of them made the, to my knowledge, I haven't seen anything otherwise, have made the full roster. Raposo is, to my knowledge, again, on the roster. I wrote this recap before all the rosters were 100% finalized. I believe he's on a supplemental slot. So
Raposo did his come on for the final 15 minutes and run really fast.
Oh, perfect. Yep. That's, he made a name for himself last year, like, doing that. He had a hell of a year last year as the super sub of, like, go sprint at things and then score goals. And he did. So can't go wrong there. Abdi Salim was signed by Orlando City. He was the only, from what I saw, the only of the draft picks to officially sign with the first team. Some of the other guys make it MLS Pro Next deals or USL deals. But Abdi did sign with the Orlando City first team. And DeAndre Kerr is with the Toronto first team as a winger, probably second in the depth chart, probably going to kind of play the same Raposo super sub role. So we'll see where that goes. Sheely, Sinclair, Johnson, and Schoberg did not sign with Galaxy, Real Salt Lake, and the Whitecaps respectively. Now that I've sprinted through that, what, I don't know if anybody was able to catch any of those games or seen anything. I saw the Nashville game to open the season and then following the Seattle game currently. So beyond that, thanks to a small child, I have not been able to catch up on the rest of the games.
Yeah, just a quick look. Raposo, we talked about, did get in the game. None of the other players mentioned made it into the game, although Abdi did make the bench for Orlando City, so he's in the you know, top 18 there. Miles Robinson played the full 90, which is great to see. Fought Mob gave him a 7.1 rating in Atlanta's 2-1 win over San Jose. So, nice to see. Again, I still can't believe that Miles is back playing 90 minutes after a pretty gruesome injury there. I thought that they were really going to kind of ease him in, but I guess the recovery and the rehab has gone well, and that bodes well for U.S. men's soccer, who I would assume Miles is going to try to get some caps in high leverage games moving forward as they try to figure out the center back pairing that was very clearly the biggest weakness of the men's national team in the World Cup, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah. Did you happen to see the game that you had mentioned the score on?
Which one?
That 0-0 that's no longer 0-0.
Oh, no, I did not.
It went the right way. Don't worry.
Okay, thank God. Okay. I literally closed FOTMob as soon as I started talking about Miles.
I forgot that both of you are Sounders fans.
Yep. Kind of weird, but both with reason.
Yes, the reason for me being Clint Dempsey is freaking awesome.
Yeah. Also, other note, the Apple TV broadcast for MLS, the camera work and camera clarity is like a step above anything that we've seen, like even watching on the big networks.
There's actually something, I was reading something really interesting. Since this is a Syracuse sports podcast, that means that we can talk about sports broadcasting.
You don't have two broadcast majors on this broadcast for nothing.
Exactly. Apparently there's just like a truck issue. Like, only, you know, the trucks have physical equipment that can broadcast at certain levels, and for ESPN at least, soccer was never really high on the priority that it was worth the effort to send the trucks where they needed to go. And you see that now, like with college basketball. college basketball is going to be a lot of 4K coverage, and because the trucks just kind of stay in the Big 12 territory.
But even like for certain like national college football broadcasts, there are a lot of complaints about, you know, certain SEC games that were not looking up to standard.
Yeah, we saw it on the ACC network a bunch. It's just there's only so much of the equipment available to use at that scale. So you have to pick and choose. But what MLS or what Apple has done is basically just did the Apple thing. Money is not an issue for us. So we can just buy an entire fleet of the best cameras and the best equipment and put them wherever we need them to. We saw with the baseball coverage that they had last year, the Apple, you know, MLB TV is probably the best streaming product, but it's reliant on local broadcasts and local TV crews to kind of do their own thing, which is like normally pretty great. But Apple had some really, you know, just phenomenal camera work and just overall really high quality baseball broadcasts, even compared to NBC's national exclusive games that they had. And so I think it's something where if you are a soccer fan and you are an MLS fan and you've been watching games previously, the quality is just going to be leaps and bounds better. It's going to feel more like a Premier League game because Apple is treating MLS the way that NBC treats the Premier League.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's a great thing for... especially for any sort of domestic soccer.
Yeah, and I, again, hoping that we see more of the Syracuse guys. Again, Mac and his program reloaded. We're going to have to probably talk about... that's probably a great final like thing here. There's been some coaching changes up on the Hill. We talked about Mac's extension last week, but it seems like there's a little bit of turnover on the staff. Steve, kind of talk us through what happened this week.
Yeah, Sean Lawler, who was the, well, previous assistant, second assistant to Yuka, and then came back after a stint at, I believe, Drexel, has now taken a gig at Penn State. So he's heading down there. Congrats to him. Great guy, great coach, great addition to the staff, and Penn State will be great. They're very happy to have him down in Happy Valley. Curious who Mac will backfill with. I haven't seen any announcements unless I missed a memo somewhere, but yeah, it's a big loss for the program, and yeah, we'll see where and how that goes. But the Orange did bring in non-coaching. They brought in 5 new transfers for the spring semester. So they're kind of reloading. I don't know if we... the only reason I didn't bust into that is because I can't remember if we talked about it prior or not. So.
Yeah, this is... we'll have an episode of just break down the new soccer roster, because why not?
That's how we do.
Yep.
But yeah, guys, did I miss anything?
Oh, yes, you did. We had a women's lacrosse program who just held pat and absolutely threw around Pitt. And also a women's basketball program who is, I think...
We can do two future things to close this off.
Sure.
Yeah. Women's basketball is the 9 seed in the ACC tournament. They'll take on NC State.
I forgot that's always the week before. It's so early.
Mm-hmm. They'll take on NC State on Thursday in the 8-9 game, which means if you know anything about brackets, the winner of that game gets the luxury of facing the 1 seed, and that's Notre Dame. So, yay.
So we're in for another 3-quarter game against Notre Dame?
Hopefully not.
Hopefully we can play all 4.
Yeah, hopefully it's 4. And the other future thing, because we are the football podcast, Combine is this week.
Oh, forgot about that.
And so, yeah, just a reminder that the 3 Syracuse players that we'll be watching at the Combine are the 3 that you expect, Bergeron, Tucker, and Williams.
Didn't get an invite.
Mikel didn't get an invite, unfortunate, but, you know, we'll see what happens with Mikel. Mock drafts are... having Bergeron inching closer and closer and closer to the first round. He's getting high second round picks right now. So like they're, you know, a good week in Indy could vault Bergeron into the first round.
Yeah, which, I guess I could see, but I also weirdly can't, just from the things he needs to work on. But I guess pro scouts think that's teachable.
Yeah. I think I saw somewhere, I think I also saw Tucker, it was either Tucker or Williams, one of the other two, in his second or third round picks, late second, early third.
That'd be great to see. Yeah. Also, in that draft pick note, just because we didn't mention it, for any of you who remotely think the Judah Mintz will be wearing orange next year, he's inching and has been shown in mocks in the first round as well. So don't hold your breath.
His jump shot has really improved over the last three games, which is the one thing he needed to work on.
Right. We went from what jump shot to hitting threes with a modicum of consistency.
Yep.
So, yeah. Like I said, don't hold your breath on him hanging around.
That's a perfect way to end this off.
Yeah. That's, we started with the bad, we finished with the bad.
And only a smattering of the good in between.
It is the perpetual Syracuse podcast.
We do have to, for the record, it though, because the only reason we didn't really touch on women's lacrosse was because we didn't really learn anything from that game at all, in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are. They're pretty good. Pretty good. Neat. Well, gentlemen. I feel like Syracuse sports didn't give us much to work with for potentially the last episode of 20 Minutes is an Absolute Podcast, but we made it work. We talked for an hour anyways, and we got in all of our favorite subjects. So for me, it feels like a win. Thank you to everybody again. If this is the last time that we are coming under the Troy Nunes banner, thank you so much for your support over these last few years. Again, if you are if you are used to reading this on nunesofedition.com, we are going to figure out something. It just might not be the way that you're used to. Otherwise, this is why you do all the things that I say at the end of every episode. You should go like and subscribe on your podcast purveyor of choice. It helps us trick the Ottoman and the AI into spreading the Ottoman Empire, and will also ensure that when we eventually switch from Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast to Disloyal Idiots, nothing changes for you. You don't have to go anywhere new. This podcast will just get delivered to your smartphone or device, and you can listen to us whenever and wherever. If you are watching us...
Moving forward, after this week, we will be also not broadcasting, but we will be uploading to YouTube as well. So if you want to subscribe on there, we will be setting up a YouTube channel for that. And you can subscribe that way via video. If you really want to look at the three of us for some reason.
Or, YouTube lets you, listen to things in the background if you have the YouTube premium stuff. So I could understand that, too. And again, Twitch, like us, follow us there. Get notified when we go live, which is mostly Sunday nights when we record this, and you can interact with us over there. We thank you again from the bottom of our hearts for the support that you've given us. And we will be back next week, probably under the Disloyal Idiot banner, but... who knows? I'm going to go with probably. Thank you all, and go Orange.
Go Orange.